Japan's nuclear crisis has countries around the world reevaluating their nuclear energy programs. But in China and India, it's full steam ahead. In India, 20 nuclear reactors are operating, and there are plans to build dozens more. Even though India's prime minister says after Fukushima there will be a thorough safety review of all nuclear facilities, the country is still moving forward with several ambitious proposals, including one to build the world's largest nuclear energy complex. We want to learn more with M.V. Ramana, a physicist at Princeton University. Ramana, you've written that Japan's crisis should be a wake-up call for India, where there have been some small accidents at nuclear facilities, and you blame those on outdated safety standards. You also say there are not enough safety protections for workers at nuclear plants, and that there's a strange, what you call, overconfidence that an accident would never happen in India. Can you explain?
Let's take the most recent example of this Fukushima accident, and there has been sort of a lot of discussion about what lessons to learn from this. The Minister of Environment and Forests, a person called Jairam Ramesh, he wrote a letter to the Prime Minister a few days ago saying that we should rethink these large nuclear parks, which are basically six large reactors that they are planning in Jaitapur. This is a small village sort of south of Mumbai. Now, this is actually being constructed in a seismic region, and what the lesson that one should be learning from Fukushima is to avoid having multiple reactors in the same place. We've seen not only that the tsunami knocked out the safety systems in all of them simultaneously, but also that accidents at one, for example, hydrogen explosions in one reactor actually affected the other reactors.
In this facility that you're talking about, in Jaitapur, yeah. This is considered to be, it'll be the world's largest nuclear complex.
That's the plan, yes. Mm-hmm. They were planning to import six large reactors from Areva in France. Each of them would be about 1,600 megawatts. That's twice the total nuclear generation capacity in India today. So that's one major concern.
I wonder if you can talk a little bit more about workers not being treated properly at some of the nuclear facilities.
To give the example of the workers, there was a exposure of six workers at the Kalpakkam reprocessing plant in 2003 to high levels of radiation. What happened was essentially that there had been a wall that failed, which allowed for high-level radioactive waste to go into an area which is supposed to take low-level radioactive waste. And the workers didn't know about it, so they went to sort of take some samples for testing, and they were exposed to this radiation. Now, why were they exposed to this radiation? Was because there was no monitors in that area to sort of look at what the radiation levels are. And only when they turned in their badges, which sort of measure the radiation as they walk in and walk out, and it comes back from the lab, do they find out that they've been exposed to this radiation. So when this happened, the workers actually went on strike. And what the management's response to that was to actually transfer some of the key leaders of the strike to other nuclear facilities in India, thereby trying to defuse the strike. Mm-hmm. And they threatened all the other people with sort of similar actions. When that happened, workers actually came back to work. And the management's response to this was to say the fact that they have come back to work shows that the place is safe. Finally, what happened was that the workers went to press. And that's when sort of everybody came to know about it. And the management sort of admitted that there had been a serious radiation accident.
Right. Have there been any changes since then to try to make sure that doesn't happen again?
We actually have no idea, because the only time when we find out about these kinds of events is when somebody goes out to press. And the last other time when we had a lot of information was when the former head of the Atomic Energy Regulatory Board, a person called A. Gopalakrishnan, he used to work from 1993 to 1996 as the head of the regulatory board, which is sort of roughly the equivalent of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission in this country. He was somebody who was somewhat conscientious about safety, and he actually ordered a thorough review of all the Indian nuclear reactors. This was in 1994, and that report identified about 130 safety issues. Some of them were serious, some of them were relatively minor. And this was not something that the nuclear establishment actually liked. So when usually these people get two terms, in his case, his term was not extended. And he was not very happy about it. And so he went out in public. And then that's how we know a lot about how things have happened. Now, this was obviously 15 years ago. So we don't really have much new information about what's happening inside. It remains, for the most part, a black box.
When we go back to the reactor proposal in Jaipur, in that particular case, the residents have been protesting as well. Are their concerns similar to what you've expressed, that you do not think that this facility should be built in a coastal area, in a densely populated area, because you feel that there are not enough safeguards in place?
They have two sets of concerns. One is certainly the issue of safety, but there's also a second concern, which is that this area is a very fertile area. There's lots of agriculture, there's fishery, and this reactor project will basically take away land and some of this access to water from these people.
The chairman of India's Atomic Energy Commission did say that about 40% of India's population does not have regular access to electricity. So India needs a source of power. Why not pursue something like this if there were enough safeguards in place? Doesn't India almost have to do this?
Yes, India does have to build up its electricity generation capacity. The problem, I think, is that the 40% of people who their chairman is talking about are going to be the last in the line for the electricity that these plants are going to generate. So the issue that many of these people do not have access to electricity is not simply a fact that they don't produce enough electricity. It's that electricity is channelized to places which have political power. The big cities, the big industries, they get the first call on this electricity, and their demand is growing as rapidly as the electricity generation can be produced. So it's not very likely that very little of this is going to trickle down to this other population. Mm. So if you say, I want electricity for the development of these people who are, let's say, in the villages, you want to be setting up generation close to them. That could be in the form of sort of decentralized renewables. It could be even small biomass fuel plants, things of that sort. But if you say that, you know, everything is going to go in for cities, now it makes sort of in some ways sense for, let's say, a city like Delhi to have its electricity come from a little bit far away where there may be a risk of an accident, but the expectation is that the radiation will not spread to Delhi. So the people in Delhi can feel relatively safe, but the people who live near the plant are going to bear the brunt of the damage. There is a distributional justice question.
Right, but there is a need then for power generation in both the cities and in the villages. And you would argue that perhaps other sources of energy be looked at depending on where the energy is going to.
Yes, and so it has to be part of a much more comprehensive strategy. And lastly, I also would say that, you know, this should be a matter of democratic decision. People have to sort of make up a decision about how they would like to see this happening. It should not be decided by experts sitting in New Delhi or in Princeton, for that matter. It should be part of a common dialogue about not just energy, but also about development paths.
M.V. Ramana, a physicist with the Program on Science and Global Security at Princeton University, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much.